Morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock Whitney Asset Management Economic Update Call. Hancock Whitney Asset Management provides this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Whitney Company or its affiliates. Please email any questions to david.lundgren@hancockwhitney.com. On today's call, we have Chief Investment Strategist Paul Seaton, Investment Directors Richard Chauvin, Martin Serrera, and Jeffrey Tangus, and Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren.
Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this month's Economic Update Call. And we normally start with a discussion about the economy, but in light of recent news on the negotiations with China regarding trade, we thought it'd be appropriate to start off with a discussion regarding that topic. And I'm going to start with you, Richard. After 2 years, it seems like we've been talking about this for an incredibly long time. It finally appeared like we were going to have a trade deal between the U.S. and China, but the last 48 hours have gotten pretty difficult, and I know things are changing by the minute here. This is obviously an important week, but if you could maybe bring our listeners up to date on where we stand as of now.
Sure will, Dave. I'm going to start with just the background numbers here. The existing tariffs that we have on Chinese imports total about $44 billion. And if the president's threat of an increase to 25% on these existing goods goes through, that would be an additional $30 billion in tariffs. And there's an additional threat that he's offered up to say he would impose tariffs of 25% on basically all the other goods that we import from China. Those goods total $325 billion. The tariffs on those would add another $80 billion in impact. So obviously the numbers get larger with this threat. First of all, I just want to say there's a couple of reasons why we shouldn't get too negative on these developments, though certainly the markets don't like it because these are drags on the global economy. First of all, it's still just a threat. It's days away, but it's not an action that's been taken yet. We think the president is doing this actually to try to complete the talks, to complete the deal successfully, not to scuttle them. He did the same thing with Canada back during the NAFTA 2, or what's better called the U.S.-Mexico-China trade agreement, with a threat near the end to settle the deal and to get it done. So it's a trade tactic or a negotiating tactic he has used before. And we'll add that despite the president's statement that he feels like the U.S. economy has benefited from the tariffs on imports, it's more likely that it has been a drag on growth in the U.S. and that U.S. growth has benefited from other actions in that it's done so in spite of these tariffs rather than because of them. We also feel strongly that this threat of a tariff increase would definitely impede China's growth and the U.S.'s growth and frankly, the entire globe's economic growth. To put that in perspective, some economists have looked at this, and the drag on U.S. growth, if this $200 billion set of goods with an increased tariff went into effect, it would modestly lower U.S. GDP by something like 0.2%. If the $325 billion threat goes through on the additional goods, that would be another 0.4% GDP impact. These are not tiny numbers, but they're not, you know, something to get really panicked about. It's very interesting to keep in perspective that if this goes through, it's definitely harder on China. China's is more dependent on trade and particularly on trade with the U.S., and the effect on these tariffs on China would be larger, about 0.9% from the existing goods being tariffed, another 1.5% if the $325 billion in goods is tariffed. So much harder effect on them. That might influence these negotiations because it is going to be more harmful to them. I will say that we've talked about this before, the fact that as we got near the end of these negotiations, and estimates are that about 90% of this deal was done and on paper, that the more vexing and difficult issues left were those that remained, and they were likely going to have to be settled between the president himself and Prime Minister Xi. We didn't quite get to that point, even though we still might, but these are some very difficult issues to deal with. What's perhaps making it more difficult now is that there's evidence that China has backtracked on some issues that were already in the agreement. When Secretary Mnuchin and Trade Representative Lighthizer came back from Beijing last week, they apparently reported to the president there'd been some backtracking on some important issues, such as forced technology transfer. When U.S. corporations go to do business in China, they're often asked to give up certain proprietary information to do that. The U.S. wanted that stopped, and China had agreed in this negotiation to change Chinese law, so that would be forbidden. Apparently, they backtracked on that. They apparently sent a draft over the weekend to the U.S. in which it was obvious they were taking back that pledge to change Chinese law. Trump saw that as an unacceptable change, and upon hearing about that, he basically put this threat out Sunday afternoon through his Twitter account. The U.S. has just not been willing to accept a deal, is not willing to accept a deal that would proceed as weak. This is a political issue that's been talked about and written about, that Trump needs, obviously would like a win. It would help his reelection campaign, but he needs a win that's based on reality, a strong win, not one based on a weak deal. The consensus, we think, has been that Trump really wants a deal. He's talked so positively about this for quite a while, that he would be willing to accept a weak deal. I think this shows at least some evidence that he's not willing to accept a weak deal. He wants China to make real changes and for the U.S. and the world to benefit from those changes, and he's willing to risk this deal not going through in order to not accept something that would be perceived as weak, which in fact wouldn't help him politically at all. So, those are my comments, Dave.
Are you feeling bold enough to maybe make a prediction or maybe just talk to what might be a likely outcome here?
Yeah, again, speculating here, but from what I understand, China has a very common pattern in many negotiations. They offer something, they either take it back or renege on it later. I think they're likely testing the president. I believe that more than likely they will test him at the meeting that's coming up this week. The trade negotiator, Premier Liu, is going to come in here with his trade team. I doubt if they're going to settle everything this week. I believe the tariff threat will go through by the president and China will retaliate. I think there will then be an opportunity for cooler minds to come into play over the weeks ahead, because in fact this threat can go through on the 25% fairly quickly on the $200 billion, but on the additional amounts that would take some time, weeks or perhaps even months, to put into effect. In that period of time, I think this can be worked out, but I believe the threat will be put in place this Friday. I just think it's too quick to undo it at this point, and China's going to probably test him further. It's 50-50, but that's my belief.
Okay. Never a dull moment. Just if you could, very, very quickly, there's also been some developments. You mentioned it in your opening comments about China regarding the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. So maybe just spend a minute kind of summarizing where that stands, because that looks like that deal might be in jeopardy as well. And that's sort of taken a back seat to all the China negotiations. Obviously, this is a very important trade agreement as well.
It's very important. It's also big numbers in the tens of billions of dollars at play here. It looks like this deal, as it stands now, won't have much of a chance of getting through Congress. There's a website where you can predict almost anything, and people bet money on all kinds of political and geopolitical events. This one's down to around 20% positive, so 80% of the bettors think that USMCA won't get passed this year. The Democratic Party and Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives is putting up a lot of roadblocks. The main one seems to be that they feel like the pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. are being given too much patent protection in this deal. She wants it shortened, and the effect of that would be if you have a shorter period of patent protection, then generics can come in earlier, and that would lower drug prices. The president, of course, has also pledged lower drug prices in his election and wants to carry that through, but he wants to do it in a different way. He wants to do it through Medicare Part B, which actually he could actually do without a congressional vote. He could do it through executive action. So this deal looks like it's in jeopardy, but I will say that it looks like drug prices are likely to come down between now and the election in 2020.
Okay, great. Thank you, Richard. And I'm fairly certain we'll be hearing about this again next month, both fronts. So, Paul Teton, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So,
go ahead.
The first quarter, we've been talking about how a lot of the economic data has been noisy, you know, given government shutdown and weather. And I guess we shouldn't be completely surprised that our first quarter GDP number, at least the headline number, came in much stronger than expected at 3.2%. And we had a really, really solid employment report last week. But, the data really continues to be mixed. So if you could maybe just kind of talk a little bit about where you think we stand here in the U.S. Regarding economic growth and then maybe where we go for the rest of the quarter and maybe even into the, you know, second half of the year. Paul?
Sure. Thank you, Dave. Well, as you mentioned, trying to divine the economic trends in the first quarter was pretty much like flying on instruments with greatly reduced visibility and a lot of a pretty bumpy ride and a lot of distortion coming from a lot of directions. A couple of episodes of government shutdowns, repeated episodes of severe weather, which became known as polar bombs, disrupted economic activity, and a surge of inventory late in 2018 ahead of tariff escalation had a lot to do with slowing down industrial production in the first quarter. All the while, with the stock market basically a smoking ruins in the rearview, it was really pretty not a very healthy, friendly outlook. However, in January, late January, the FOMC under Chairman Powell did affirm that they were going to pause the increases in the Fed funds rate for the rest of the year and modify their quantitative tightening and terminate that program sooner than expected. So that was a pretty key mood elevator for the markets and kind of a turning point for sentiment to improve. And then in March and April, sure enough, we began to see stronger growth patterns reemerge after all these cross currents. And pretty robust improvement from several economic sectors, including employment and job growth, retail sales, overall personal consumption expenditure. Productivity growth was strong in the first quarter. And as you mentioned, the actual first quarter real GDP first pass a couple weeks ago at 3.2% was much stronger than expected. So the headline was strong and contributed to the overall rebound mood, although the internals in that GDP report confirmed the weak final demand that we had been expecting, and that the number was buoyed by unsustainable strength in inventories and trade. So we expect final demand to be improving in the second quarter, but we'll have to watch and see how the inventory and trade factors play on that. So it's a lot clearer visibility today than 3 months ago. Consumers are in good condition with strong job growth, modest wage growth, modest to healthy growth in real disposable personal income, and consumer confidence is up. Weak manufacturing production in the first quarter should improve in the second quarter as strong personal consumption returns inventories to more normal levels. An interesting note on productivity growth, which was, I think, about 3%, 3.6, something like that for the first quarter, really a pretty strong number. There's a lot of noise in productivity, so we don't tend to look too much at quarterly number, but the trend, which has been very weak, might well be making a turn for the better, which would be a very positive signal that the capital spending wave that we saw in the last year, it wasn't an enormous thing, but it definitely was improved from before the tax cuts, that capital spending may be delivering the desired results in non-inflationary growth, which is to say that the CapEx, accelerates potential GDP and limits inflationary pressures. So this week, as Richard has mentioned, trade has returned to the forefront and presents a lot of near-term risks. The expectation is that depending on how long it lasts and to what effect it goes into effect, that it could have a drag on GDP effect for the year on the order of somewhere between 0.2 and 0.4%. So our expectation had been that real GDP this year would moderate from the 3.1% trend through most of last year and through the first quarter back to about 2.5% by year end. So that was about 0.5% stronger than consensus, which is closer to 2%. So the trade tensions present the possibility that growth might slow instead toward 2%. Again, that's speculative at this point. We don't have high confidence on the outcome on this trade front yet. Would also note that the New York Fed recession probability index for the next 12 months has risen pretty significantly in recent months from 15% to 28%. So the history is that this index, when it gets up over 40%, the wheels start getting wobbly on the economy, so we're not in a true fire alarm. My sense is that 28% print is a little bit stale and hasn't incorporated some of the more positive numbers that have come out in the last week or so. So anyway, we've got an elevated probability of recession risk, but not a major fire alarm at this point. So as Richard tried to guide us, we think with, you know, not a lot of confidence that a trade deal is probably more likely than not. I think Richard called it 50-50. So it seems like both sides have a lot to gain from getting a deal done. The question is whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. But with any deal, the recession probability probably continues to fade. So basically, growth outlook here is pretty favorable. The second quarter is questionable in that some of these distortions in the first quarter may not be completely wrung out of the numbers, but we do expect to see stronger final demand, and that's the key driver of growth going forward for the year. So as I think has been mentioned, while the U.S. outlook is pretty good, growth risks remain prevalent abroad. And in fact, this morning, the European Union cut its real GDP forecast for 2019 from 1.3 to 1.2%, and showing a weak rebound to 1.5% in 2020, and spotlighting pronounced growth risks in Germany and Italy. So continued cross currents abroad, but really a much better outlook in the U.S. economy today than 3 months ago.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Jeff Tangus, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
Well, that's a tremendous amount of information for the bond market to digest, and it sort of seems like they're just kind of in a wait-and-see mode. We hadn't seen a lot of movement on interest rates, at least anything dramatic, given, you know, the last few weeks here. And, you know, the Fed met on May 1, also, at least, you know, from my point of view, it seems like they're going to stay on hold to kind of see how all this stuff plays out. So, but give me your outlook on terms of, you know, what's going on in the bond market now. You know, what are some of the major issues that have, or some change, and where do we go from here? So, Jeff?
Glad to, Dave. Well, as we've heard already from Paul and Richard, the economy here in the United States is doing quite well. The rest of the world. That puts the Fed in a really comfortable place. In spite of a lot of the rhetoric that comes out of the White House trying to wrangle the Fed for lower interest rates, the Fed feels really confident in their assessment on the economy right now. And in that May 1st meeting that they just had, Jay Powell said that they're still clearly in the patient mode, that the Fed did not change rates. As a matter of fact, they said they have no bias right now to hike or to cut interest rates. They're still in neutral, and they're very comfortable. Now, in the post-meeting press conference, Powell talked a lot about inflation, and we've had very weak inflation now for several months, especially core inflation. And just to remind our listeners, the Fed has an out loud target of 2% on core inflation. Now, the issue is that they have not been able to get core inflation up to 2%. And that's what the market keeps focusing on, is that the Fed inflation numbers are actually going lower lately, not higher. So the market started thinking that that might mean the Fed would cut. But the Fed keeps throwing cold water on that pretty much at every turn. As a matter of fact, in the post-meeting conference, Powell said that he feels like those lower numbers are, in the Fed speak, transitory, temporary, in my words. And that eventually later on this year, that's going to correct itself. So he threw a lot of cold water on that, and he was really vindicated. The Fed has been vindicated in two big ways lately. Paul mentioned the big GDP number for the first quarter. That was surprisingly strong. 2 days after the Fed meeting, we reported the blockbuster job number, which I think was 263,000, if I remember correctly. Way above what people were expecting. So those two things really gave the Fed cover for not doing anything in either direction. Those facts really pointing to the reality that our economy is in good shape. But the Fed always points out that while we are in good shape, the rest of the world is in really not so good a shape. Paul mentioned Europe as probably the best example. And so the Fed is always quick to point out that while things are great here, it warrants keeping a close eye on the global economy because of concerns over a spillover effect. So not everything is perfect, but it's pretty good for the Fed right now, as good as it's been in some time. The Fed meets again on June 19th. Just a couple weeks, and so no action is expected at that point. the market has really come around in late March with some of these inflation numbers and some other and just some other market events. Investors were just convinced that the Fed was going to have to cut interest rates later this year. In late March, the market assigned an 80% probability that the Fed would cut later this year. That's now down to about 56%. So the market has really changed its tune in a big way as to whether the Fed cuts later this year or waits until next year. That number was actually 50% last week prior to the trade news that came out, and I guess concerns about a slowing economy if something didn't get accomplished there concerned investors a little bit. So it peaked up a little bit since last week, but we're back to somewhere near 50-50 in terms of a rate cut from investors later this year. So that's a pretty big sea change in market psychology. As Paul mentioned, in Europe, that continues to be a weak spot. We have negative yields in Germany again, and negative 3 basis points on their 10-year government bond. That's obviously an indication that of weakness in Europe, and that has ramifications for our markets as well. Along with lower inflation, capital movements around the globe keep pressure on our yields, pushing them lower, and that's pretty much what we've seen over the last month. Longer-term rates, because of good inflation and capital flows, have pushed longer-term rates lower, about 5 basis points lower for the month. We're 2.46 on the 10-year today. There was a lot of talk about a month and a half ago about a curve inversion. A lot of that sort of thing has sort of corrected itself. That seems to have been kind of a fluke that doesn't appear to be on anybody's radar at this point. So in the fixed income markets, rates have moved down a little bit over the last month, but in a relatively orderly fashion, again, with low inflation and a Fed on hold, the market really is in a good place right now. On the corporate bond side, corporate bonds have been on a tear for most of this year. That's cooled off in the last couple of weeks, I think exhaustion as much as anything. The great rally in corporate bond prices, which were just really nothing more than a reversal of the fourth quarter of 2018, seems to have run its course for the most part. As has high yield bonds, same thing there. Yields dropped pretty dramatically in the first several months of this year, but that has also sort of run its course. So we're right now, it looks like there's a fairly balanced equation now in the bond markets where the forces towards higher yields and lower yields tilt a little bit towards lower yields right now, but I suspect that's run its course for the most part as well. So it's a fairly calm time in the fixed income markets right now, and the Fed's in a good place, Dave.
Great. Good to hear. Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, Martin.
Hello, Dave. Good morning.
So, you know, we're believe it or not, right in the midst of earnings season, and I think a lot of these other issues are overshadowing what appears to be shaping up to be a pretty good report in terms of earnings. And, I think the market, much like the bond market, has a lot of information to digest. And, you know, some of the good news on earnings is being offset by, you know, some of these other geopolitical issues and has kind of resulted in a little bit more volatility and what appears to be a little bit more of a sideways move for stocks opposed to the burst that we saw earlier this year. So if you could maybe just kind of talk about, you know, where we are, what's happened, where we go from here. Martin?
Yeah, sure, Dave. And you're right. It has been a much better earnings season than it was expected to be, which has helped to provide a pretty impressive lift to stock prices in April. The sideways trend you just mentioned has been in the last couple of days. But for the month of April, the S&P 500, for example, is up total return over 4%, and so that caps off a year-to-date number of over 18%. So stocks have definitely been in a pretty impressive run. One of the trends that was in place for most of the preceding period, except for the fourth quarter last year, seems to have resumed, which is that growth stocks have done better than value stocks. But a different trend seems to have reversed a little bit, in that mid-cap stocks continue to outperform large-cap stocks. So in the month of April as well as year-to-date, mid-cap and mid-cap growth especially, I think mid-cap growth is up 25% so far this year. So you're right. It seems like other things are dominating the headlines while market fundamentals appear to be improving. During the earnings reporting season, analysts expected the S&P 500 to post earnings decline of almost 5%, and as of this morning, the actual decline was about 0.75%. So a negative number, but a much better negative number than the street expected. But the real good news, the real news is on the top line. Top line revenue growth for the S&P 500 is around 5.5% so far this year, while the street had been expecting about a 5% number. So you know, some of the things that Paul talked about in terms of CapEx, in terms of personal consumption expenditures, are showing up in the reports in the first quarter, leading to pretty good stock performance for the month of April. And then, of course, again, as you said, you know, we've sort of hit a little bumpy road the last couple of days now. Market's down a percent or 2% or so since the end of April. The biggest surprises in the month kept up with that theme. Consumer discretionary stocks were the best performer. That includes a company like Amazon, but it also includes companies like Ford and GM, which posted a lot better results than expected, kind of like the S&P 500 overall, slightly negative, but not nearly as negative as the street expected. But also in the industrial sector, especially in aerospace and defense, a company like Lockheed Martin did really well in terms of earnings performance. You know, when we started the year, we've talked about this before, we started the year at pretty reasonable valuations given the pullback in the fourth quarter and the impressive earnings performance last year. The stock market in general was pretty attractively valued in a low inflation 3% GDP growth environment. The rally so far this year, the 18% lift in prices has certainly pushed valuations higher to pretty high levels, but not nearly what we would consider to be extremely overvalued, just levels to be wary of when thinking about long-term attractiveness of stocks. Paul touched on a few things that I think are going to continue to drive equity markets as we go through this year. Personal consumption expenditures is one thing, but CapEx also. And Paul talked about it a little bit in the sense that we had a CapEx, I think he said, explosion as a result of tax cuts, leveled off a little bit. But underlying the CapEx numbers, the CapEx surveys, the surveys of asking business executives what they think trends in future expenditures will be, those surveys are all sort of pointing in the right direction. They seem to be indicating improvement in CapEx in the months and quarters ahead. So, you know, we would think that would be a pretty positive support to stock prices going forward. And if we get it, you know, if we get more quarters like the first quarter with a number that's better than economist surveys expected, that also should provide lift to stock prices. Outside the U.S., it's a much more of a mixed bag in line with some of the economic things that are driving markets. Earnings performance has not nearly been as impressive. Stock price performance has been good. It's been an everything rally so far this year, but it hasn't kept pace with the U.S. So we think that kind of trend will continue in place. The U.S. is certainly a more attractive environment to operate at the moment, both economically in terms of impediments to growth as well as demographic trends compared to other developed markets. So the rebound in stock prices since the December lows has been impressive. We might not see the same acceleration going ahead, but I think we're going to see continued support for stock prices for the rest of the year. So I'll stop there, Dave, and turn it back to you.
All right. Great. Thank you so much, Martin, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. Please join us next month We'll have our call on Tuesday, June 4th. Thank you.